Welcome to Clinical Conversations, a Journal Watch podcast. It's for the week ending July 2nd. This is podcast number 94. I'm Joe Elia. As an experiment, we'll put the clinical news of the week at the end of this podcast and start right off with the interview. Here we go. You're listening to Clinical Conversations. This week's Archives of Internal Medicine looks closely at the question of whether statins are useful in primary prevention of cardiovascular events in high-risk patients. One of the papers is a meta-analysis that examined only those studies that were done in subjects free of cardiovascular disease at baseline, or could provide data on subjects that were. The 11 studies analyzed encompassed over 65,000 subjects, and meta-analysis did not find a primary prevention benefit from statins. We've invited the study's first author, Dr. Kausik Ray, to discuss his findings. Dr. Ray is a senior clinical research associate at the University of Cambridge and a consultant cardiologist at Addenbrooke's Hospital, also in Cambridge, England.
I didn't want to interrupt your introduction. I started the research when I was at Cambridge. I have moved institutions, so I'm now Professor of Cardiovascular Disease Prevention at St. George's, University of London.
Welcome, Dr. Ray.
Thank you.
Did your findings surprise you, or were you surprised that no one had taken your approach on this question already?
Well, to answer your second question first, people have adopted this approach previously. We started this about 2 years ago. And what has been sort of slightly flawed in some of the earlier analyses that have been done is that there are some trials which were principally in people without cardiovascular disease, i.e. aimed at a primary prevention population, but by chance or other reasons, there had been some people included in those studies, even though, you know, the vast majority, maybe 90%, were primary prevention. So we've never really had a clean snapshot at this, and that's what we sought to examine. We believed that if you increase the sample size, and we did that to 65,000 people by really getting virtually the entirety of the world data that was out there, that we would probably just about see a nominal significant benefit. And the main reason for doing this was to try and allay some of the fears that people have about statins in primary prevention, and that was the main reason for doing this.
The data could not have been easy to gather. You, as you describe in the paper, say that you, for those studies where the researchers could give you the raw data on patients who did not go into the study with cardiovascular disease, they gave you those data, right?
That's right. I mean, we set out to examine randomized controlled trials where the individuals had successfully followed the trial protocol. So there were a few trials done in the Far East where the randomization failed, or there was some other reason that the trial wasn't really completely randomized all the way through. So those trials, after further query, had to be excluded. And we approached, if the information was available in principal manuscripts, we obtained that information. In some studies where they had mixed population, we had to go to the initial authors, and that obviously took quite a lot of time to get that information, but we wanted to be robust in our methodology. And to be absolutely accurate about this, we estimated that if you look at a clean data set based on randomized trials today, we had about 65,000 people. There are only 2,400 individuals that we could have added that weren't provided by the principal authors, where the authors principally refused to provide that information to us.
Hmm.
So, you know, out of 67,000 individuals, we've got 65,000.
Hmm.
That's pretty clean.
Yes, it is very clean, and you must owe some favors to those researchers.
Oh, absolutely, and they're all acknowledged in the manuscript.
Right.
And I mean, I think it's incumbent on all of us to, because individual studies can give us extreme findings, and it's really only when we pull the totality of the data together that we start to, if you like, see regression to the truth.
Have you answered the question to your satisfaction, or do you think that you're going to need longer follow up data? You do say that you do caution that the follow up was only about what, 4 years or something.
Yes, that's right, 3.7 years, I think it was exactly. But I think there are two things. One is that if you look at the data, they give you a clear indication of safety. I mean, the upper boundary of the confidence interval just touches the null. So I think we can assume that from, even in a short period of time, that if you give statins to individuals for the reason of primary prevention, what you are preventing is by and large going to be non-fatal events, that the effects on all-cause mortality are going to be modest. Even if we had, let's say, another 5,000 individuals and we got a few more events, we got about 2,800 deaths here. The point estimate, which was 0.91, may have been 0.90, may have been 0.92, and just significant, but the absolute benefit is not going to differ markedly from 7 events prevented for every 10,000 people you treat for a year in this population. And I think what we do know is from a number of different strategies that the longer you treat, the greater the benefit. Mm-hmm. We've seen this from the WASCOPS follow-up data. This was a trial in primary prevention, men in Scotland with high cholesterol levels. And if you follow up beyond the 5-year period through to about 15 years, we saw there was an all-cause mortality benefit if you follow these individuals through. And that's likely to be the case because risk of dying obviously increases with age and the longer individuals are followed up in these studies. We won't, I think, by and large, be able to get 65,000 individuals where we have 15 years' worth of follow-up because many of these studies haven't actually continued to follow up those individuals. But if they have and then that data is available, then there is no reason why we couldn't combine that, and I would be very surprised if those data didn't show a significant benefit.
So do your results provide reassurance to people who want to continue using statins and as primary prevention?
Absolutely. I think what it does do, it provides reassurance for individuals using statins. I think it also enables us when patients question that, what will I gain, doctor, from the benefits of these drugs over the next few years, we can say categorically that it will reduce your risk of hospitalization for a heart attack, for a stroke. Is it likely to have a major impact on prolonging life from any cause? The answer is very unlikely or very modestly. So you know, we're able to provide some reassurance, but I think the other thing it does is it probably doesn't support more, if you like, extending our current guidelines to even lower risk populations and in the hope that it might prevent or death from any cause, because the event rates will be lower and therefore the benefits will be lower. There will probably be benefits for, again, non-fatal myocardial infarction and strokes, but again, the lower the absolute level of risk, the lower the benefits that you're getting, and I think that's what we saw here.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say that I think what it does do is that people often look at this data or they look at trials and say, well, this supports the hypothesis that statins perhaps don't work here. No, that's not really, if you really, what this data says. I think this data shows the difficulties between primary and secondary prevention. In secondary prevention, the guesswork has gone. We know these individuals are at very high risk. They have established disease. We know that nearly half the deaths that will occur from vascular disease. And the statins reduce vascular deaths, they will have a bigger impact on all-cause mortality. What we are very poor at is predicting who amongst the general population, who is healthy out there, healthy out there, and who of those individuals actually is going to go on and have that first event. If we were better predicting that, then statins would actually have a great impact. But the problem is that you have, even in so-called primary prevention based on traditional risk factors, Framingham, even novel risk factors, you have a dilutional effect because many of those individuals wouldn't have had an event anyway, whether we gave them a statin or not. And therein lies the challenge in primary prevention.
Have you changed your practices as a result of your work?
I think that it hasn't changed my overall practice because it was based on existing clinical guidelines, so I see no reason to extend that. It's mainly what it's done is it's allowed me to better inform my patients in clinical practice as to what the likely benefits are going to be with respect to fatal and non-fatal events.
All right. Well, that's a great summary of what you found, Dr. A. I want to thank you for your time with us today.
Thank you.
Now the week's news. It's been a fairly busy week for clinical news. Here are the highlights as reported by Physicians First Watch. The New England Journal of Medicine released a study early in the week showing that starting dialysis early in chronic kidney disease is not necessarily better. Among some 850 patients randomized to early or late starts based on their estimated glomerular filtration rates, there was no mortality difference between the groups after 3.5 years of follow-up. The authors conclude that delaying dialysis until the GFR drops below 7 milliliters per minute or until traditional clinical signs indicate the need for it is reasonable with patients under careful management. And speaking of dialysis, the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology reported that digoxin use in hemodialysis patients is associated with a 28% increased risk for death. The increase remains significant even after adjustment for disease severity and other possible confounders. Well, rosiglitazone has had a bad week. An updated meta-analysis and a separate retrospective cohort study in over 200,000 Medicare patients shows risks for the patients taking the drug. An editorialist in JAMA suggests removal of the diabetes drug from the U.S. market as one option. Later this month, an FDA advisory panel meets to discuss that very thing. Speaking of glucose, tight control in high-risk diabetes has mixed results. But because of increased mortality among the tightly controlled, the advantages seem outweighed by the increased risk for death, making the strategy of aggressive glucose targets seem imprudent, according to one study. Finally this week, a study done in Sweden finds that although prostate screening with PSA lowers mortality by almost half, it comes at the cost of overdiagnosis. Moreover, the results are most applicable to regions of the world where there has not been extensive PSA screening. That leaves the U.S. out of that picture. Well, that's it for this week. My email address is jelia, J-E-L-I-A, at jwatch, J-W-A-T-C-H, .org. Or you can leave voicemail at 1-617-440-4374. Earlier podcasts are available at podcasts.jwatch.org, where links for all news stories can also be found. The Journal Watch website is jwatch, J-W-A-T-C-H, .org. There you'll find almost 25 years of summaries of the most clinically useful research. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time, and thanks for listening.